Hello and welcome to Humanity Unites, Stories of Rights and Resilience, a UN Human Rights podcast series. I'm Lisa Smith from UN Human Rights. In the coming weeks, we will bring to you interviews and in-depth conversations with thought leaders and inspiring activists who are at the forefront of human rights issues. In this episode, as we mark International Women's Day, we take a closer look at women's and girls' leadership in peace-building efforts. Stay tuned. Across the world, women and girls lead efforts to demand more peaceful and equal societies. Yet despite their essential role in peacebuilding, women human rights defenders still face challenges when it comes to getting a seat at the tables of power. Today we hear from two extraordinary young women who made their own table. Ria William Uyada was a baby when she fled South Sudan with her family. She decided to return to create a women's movement for peace, Crown the Woman. Leila Aloudat is the Deputy Secretary General at the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Leila is also a human rights lawyer from Syria who has worked for years on human rights litigation and advocacy. They are interviewed by Iban Viela Beitia from UN Human Rights.
I feel like when we are asked the question of tell us about yourself, it is a tough one. In a nutshell, I am a women's human rights activist and peace activist. As introduced before, I work with Crown the Woman, a feminist organization here in South Sudan that has been working sleeplessly to promote peace in our communities. I am also a peace activist. I've been doing a lot of peace work at the grassroots with children through the initiative that you mentioned called Play for Peace. I also call myself a necessary noisemaker. Necessary in a sense that there's so much injustices happening to us in the world, especially women and children.
Well, that's a remarkable personal story. What about you, Leila? How did you get involved in peace building and the rights of women?
I'm a human rights lawyer from Syria, and I started my career as a corporate lawyer. And I was also interested in international humanitarian law, which I'd done on voluntary basis through the Syrian Red Cross. And then I decided that I want to explore and make a shift in my career, and had the privilege being able to go to London and study human rights law. I was incredibly lucky to meet my ideological home at the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. It's a century-old organization that looks at root causes of war and violence. In the League, we fight structural systems of oppression and aspire to build feminist peace through the power of collective activism and mobilization. And having been my home for the past 10 years, I feel empowered by the work of wonderful women and wonderful feminists around the world who come together to address these root causes and work to build lasting, sustainable feminist peace.
Yeah, you were a baby when you fled South Sudan with your sister and your mother, and then you decided to return back home to South Sudan and start a women's movement for peace. Is this your main driving force, or do you have any particular experience or person that has inspired you in your work, in what you do, in your day-to-day work?
The journey back home to Juba was a tough one because I remember we took a journey that only takes about a day to drive from Kampala to Juba. It took us more than 2 weeks, you know, to drive. There were roadblocks. They would ask you, they would check your car and check you here and there. So it was also a tough journey. But for me, that was home. Because when I was in Uganda, there was this thing where they would ask you, where are you from? There are names that would be given specifically to people that looked from us, like us who are from the Sudan. Because, you know, most Sudanese are tall and dark. And so it would be easily to be identified that these are South Sudanese. And when we're in schools, I remember some of the children would be screaming, oh, Sudanese. And others would tell us, oh, you just cause a lot of war. You're just warmongers, you know. And at some point, I would ask myself, but I'm not fighting anyone. So for me, coming back was to also contribute to building this country. I was like, this is home. I am here to also add my contributions to building the country. And I am proud that I am doing that. It is tough, but we are doing it.
What about you, Laila? You grew up in Damascus. You are now based in London. And a lot of your work is mostly in North Africa, in the Middle East. Do you have any particular experience that has inspired you in your work, in your dedication to women's rights and leadership and peace building?
I come from a conflict country, and although I'm alive, my close family are alive, but the price we paid is huge, and the price that has been paid by generations of my country, who, like you, Ria, have not made a decision to fight and have never fighted, is huge and is painful. And I think it's our role, and the feminist movement plays a big role in connecting this price, which affects groups disproportionately, to the cause and to political decisions. I personally have been incredibly lucky to work around and meet and be inspired by fantastic feminists. And one that I will always take with me, when I studied at SOAS, when I studied human rights law, we had an amazing professor called Farida Banda, and she taught us human rights of women. And I remember Farida Banda saying, we have a duty, women have a duty to look at the root causes and to look at the motivations and what's happening in seemingly peaceful countries. She asked European women to look in their countries at immigration policies and militarization policies that are contributing to violence in other places in the world. She also asked us to look at colonial history and at historic injustices that are resulting in things that we are seeing. And her global approach to violence and to mending violence has stayed with me and has founding in my political, personal growth.
We know that war and conflict has a devastating toll on women and girls. Why do you think it is important to engage women and girls in peace-building efforts, in sustainable development? Let's start with you, Laila.
I slightly worry about the notion of engaging women in peace-building, because it unintentionally suggests that it is a men's space that we are going to engage women in. And while this is a political reality at the moment, it's also important to look at what are we identifying as peace-building and why do we need to, quote-unquote, engage women in it. We look at peace-building as the one of many layers of peace building. We look at political negotiations. We look at conflict resolution as peace building, which it is a space that has historically excluded women. But the peace building chain is much, much longer, and women play a fantastic role in it, although sometimes they call it other things. One big learning moment for me was in 2015, and we were in a convening which had women across the Middle East and North Africa, and looking at threats to peace. And I will always remember that there's, at the time, of course, there was this push by governments to combat violent extremism. And it was there was funds and efforts behind it and a lot of attention to it. And one of the women leaders there said something that stayed with me. She said that she and her groups and the women who work with her have been fighting extremism long before Western governments given it a name and identified it as an issue. She has been doing that through her engagement in youth, in her engagement in local activism. That work conversation first told me that we all have a role to play in identifying what is the problem and who sees the problem, and also to defer to local and regional expertise. They're not there to inform global policy. They are there to be central in creating global policy and are more likely to achieve peace that works, one that's sustainable and meaningful.
What about you, Riya? Why is it important that decisions on peace reflect women's realities and perspectives and their rights?
First, we are the majority of the population. You know, I always tell people that the world should be proud of South Sudanese women. We are over 60% of the population. And so we were the majority voters in the referendum to have a South Sudan. Without women going to the polls to vote, we would not have South Sudan. And voting and democracy are some of the pieces of peace. Now, to pick from where my sister Leila had stopped, Leila had talked about that peace building is one of the many measures that we use in sustaining peace in our world. So for me, for peace to be sustainable is including intentionally us, the women, which has not been the case. And when women are part of peace processes and peace building, it is more sustainable and war is actually reduced by a huge percentage. The other one is if we women are part of peace building processes at a national level, grassroots level, and all levels, we are able to build economies.
That's such an important point you said, Riya, about the difficulties that women who do participate face. Constant patriarchal, misogynist assumptions that they have to deal with. The fact that representation is reduced to women represent women as if representing the whole community is not everyone's job.
Talking about challenges, you both work in different cultures and regions, one in the Middle East mostly and the other one in sub-Saharan Africa. But could you talk a little bit about what are the barriers women and girls face in this civic space, and in particular in participating in peace-building efforts?
And for me, I just want to share, we know each time I share something about a woman, I carry the voices of many women. These are our stories. But my story is just a drop in the ocean of the challenges that we face as women. And one of them is intentional exclusion. So there are some gender roles that have been ascribed to women, that a woman cannot do this, a man can do this better. When we talk about, for example, leadership, we will be told or women are not good leaders because women are emotional, because women are this. But society forgets that emotions are part of the package, because who wants a leader that has no emotions? Who wants a leader that does not have people at heart? Patriarchy is a very big challenge and pushback in our communities where everything is dominated by men, socially, politically, and economically.
It's amazing to listen to you, Riya, and to put in fantastic terms what an intersectional fight should look like and what kind of impact that the women movement is carrying in very, very difficult circumstances. And I completely agree with you. I think women continue to face this notion and suggestion that there's a hierarchy of causes. There's causes that need to be dealt with before others. And for some reason, women's priorities keep getting pushed down and they're intersecting priorities with other issues you mentioned, like class, age, disability, and otherwise, and kept getting deprioritized. Digital public spaces are not safe for women. The kind of challenges that women face by speaking up are huge and unfortunately not centered as serious safety issues. And this is changing in a far lower pace than we would like to see. And it has a direct impact on peace building.
Have you seen change in attitudes or in gender roles? We've been talking a lot about the barriers and the challenges. Do you see room for optimism through your work, through your advocacy in the field? Is there change happening?
I think there is more courage. We've been allowed the space to think and analyze rather than just trying to reflect and react on one crisis after the other. There's a lot of knowledge being produced in the Global South to match and complement the knowledge produced in the Global North. Now we are balancing this. There is stamina, and I'm seeing a long-term commitment. We're pacing ourselves for the long fights in front of us. I think also we are looking at fights that we have to face collectively. It's not one or the other. I think there's better understanding and appetite to look at the collective nature of resistance and also analyzing the challenges we're facing better. And I'm definitely hopeful.
I'm grateful to hold this space with you, Leila. Thank you so much for this space. The world is changing very rapidly. There are new crises happening every day. There are new problems coming up every day. And I appreciate the women that really came before me and the women that are working with me. I see even young voices, young women like Malala Yousaf, young women like Rhea William from South Sudan, all the women and other sisters like Leila here. This gives me hope that we are not about to give up on ourselves and our world.
As we celebrate International Women's Day, what is your vision for the future of women's role in peace building? And maybe you can also share what this day means to you personally and how do you celebrate it? Maybe you want to start with you, Leila.
So I'm slightly skeptical about international days just because their proneness to commercialization and tokenism. However, I'm incredibly inspired by what Rhea said, and we all need to be necessary noisemakers. Misogyny and patriarchy kills. We can't afford not to make noise when noise is needed, and it could not have been more needed than it is today. And it's a day of activism and collective work and a day of connecting with all the fantastic activists that we are lucky enough to be fighting this fight with.
Rhea, what about you? What's your personal vision for the future of women's roles in peace building and how do you celebrate it?
For me, I appreciate International Women's Day. However, it should not just be one day of celebration. We should celebrate women every day. You know, the fact that we wake up and breathe in and live in a tough environment and country and society, it's worth celebrating. Look at the day and just celebrate our resilience and celebrate our achievements and celebrate our strength. And this year, let us include all women. Let us not leave anyone behind. The woman in the village, the woman in the city, the working class woman, the woman who is staying at home, the young girl, the young child, you know, let us make it about women. Let us include everyone.
Leila, Women International's League for Peace and Freedom is one of the oldest women's peace groups. Why is there still a need for organizations like this specifically today? And how does your organization work with other peace organizations, including the new generation?
Great question. Feminist peace is needed because war continues and violence continues. Advocacy and activism over a century has made a lot of difference, but there's a lot to be done. And we work very closely across the peace movement, across the feminist movement. We are also a vibrant movement that is changing. Young women are shaping our movement inside Wilf.
Rhea, how does your work connect with other movements for women's rights and peace?
With this specific question, I always say I am a grassroots woman in South Sudan. But South Sudan is part of the global village. And so our voices feed into the global women's movements. And by the way, Leila, I think you don't know about this, but Wilf also shaped who I am. There was a time, the crisis in Cameroon. I was invited by Wilf Cameroon with the support of the Noble Women Initiative. That is the organization that was founded by the women who have won the Nobel Peace Prize. And they supported me in this journey. It was called the Solidarity Visit to Cameroon. So many of us as women came together and went to Cameroon to show solidarity with the women in Cameroon and calling onto the government and international community to put an end to the war in Cameroon. And so my work and my voice is part of so many women's spaces and movements like WOLF, the Noble Women Initiative, AWID, that is Association of Women in Development. We also have coalitions that we belong to, for example, the Southland Women Coalition for Peace that also works with other women doing similar work on women's rights, peace building, and also working with other women within the region and globally.
That is so beautiful to hear, and I'm incredibly touched by what you said. There's a need for the movement because the reasons behind it still exist. There's always going to be a movement for feminist peace as long as patriarchy, militarization, and racism exist. We are going to continue to fight. They take different shapes, and so does our activism. And the movement is not working in a vacuum.
Staying on the topic of equal representation of women in decision-making, let's get a view from an expert. Nicole Emmeline is a member and former chair of the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. Nicole talks about parity as a fundamental human right and what states and other actors need to do to achieve this. She is interviewed by Yvonne Viela-Beitia.
It's a question of justice first, but also patriarchy has excluded women for decades and centuries. We do need this paradigm shift based on the CEDAW Convention, because the preamble of the CEDAW Convention states that there is no possibility of sustainable development or peace without women. Today, you are absolutely right. All the challenges that we face nowadays call for a new vision of governance, because if we don't have this sort of change of model, the risk for women is probably a new historic discrimination. If you take the example of digital economy, the gap between men and women today is a new risk of discrimination. And in the same view, when you consider parliaments, only 25% of parliamentarians all over the world are women. If we want to advance women's rights, we need to ensure parity at all levels of economic and political life.
Do you think there is a difference in the way women and men lead and engage with others?
I think that there is no fundamental difference, but there are some specificities, characteristics. For instance, I think that women are in a better capacity, for instance, to manage complexity, to create horizontal leadership, to be in a sort of long-term vision. And we have to find innovative ways in terms of enabling environment for men and women, because I don't oppose, of course, men and women.
You've mentioned the low participation rate of women in parliament across the world. Tell us about the obstacles that women and girls face on the road to meaningful participation.
It's a sort of a fight, and women has to fight twice as a man, because at all levels to run for elections in parliaments, women face all sorts of barriers. So it's a very hard life, because women have to adapt system. We need to rebuild differently. We need to bring everyone along. I propose to accelerate, because we cannot stay at this level of women in parliaments. It's not fair. I'm speaking about women in preventive diplomacy, for instance, and in all sectors, including security defense. We need women in parliaments, and we need 50-50.
Tell us about your vision for the future general recommendation on equal and inclusive representation of women in decision-making system.
For me, it is probably the only way to a better world. If women are still absent from the decision-making process, it's impossible to imagine a fair, peaceful, and better world. And if we have something to do, because March 8th is, of course, a very symbolic date, but I call for all leaders today, NGOs, political leaders, economic leaders, to understand that it is not only an obligation, it's a question of justice. Parity is a response to the current challenges that we face. It's probably a solution because it's absolutely stupid not to be aware of the capacity of collective intelligence, of mobilization of all the capacities of men and women on equal foot to respond to the risk that we meet today.
You have an example of how parity has contributed to peace, or maybe there's a personal example that you have seen in your career.
I don't see many women ready to declare wars in the world. I have many examples. All women in politics that I met in France, for instance, Simone Veil has been a wonderful example. Julia Gillard in Australia, the first prime minister of this country. Women who have managed COVID crisis, they have been engaged to stability and security. These women, they have managed their countries within a patriarchal system. And it was not easy. So women generally, and especially women in NGOs, on the ground, human rights defenders, are making a wonderful job for peace. But unfortunately, they are in a unique capacity, not enough recognized as leaders for peace globally.
Well, we've come to the end of this episode of Humanity Unites. I want to thank Rhea, Layla, and Nicole once again for chatting with us. Join us next time to hear what difference the decade has made for people of African descent in advancing the human rights and equal participation in their lives. If you want to learn more about our work, please go to our website, www.ohchr.org. I'm Lisa Smith, and thanks for listening.